Welcome to Spoon Press Audio, the podcast for your daily story fix with your host, author, and award-winning entrepreneur, Anna M.
Hello, my name is Anna Im, and you're listening to Spoon Press Audio. This is chapter 8 of my story, Don't Know Jack. And things are beginning to tense up for poor old Jack. There's a lot of twists and turns in this episode, so sit tight. I hope you like it. The policeman steps aside and indicates that Jack should go down the escalator in front of him. "Where are we going?" Jack asks over his shoulder. "Not far," the policeman says. "We'll be at the station soon. This is the quickest way. Don't worry." "Oh, okay." Jack turns and faces front again as the escalator carries them down into the tunnels under the city. Two steps in front of him is a young boy clinging to his father's hand. The boy has a blue rucksack, and when he turns, Jack can see the slogan on the back of the bag. Two words, printed in bold white letters on the blue canvas. Just leave. Again, Jack feels a small trickle of unease. But considering Susanna has just been kidnapped right in front of his very eyes, that is to be expected. That he is not freaking out completely is a wonder. They arrive on the underground platform just as the train pulls in, and when the doors slide open, they get on. The carriage is half empty, and Jack and the officer sit down next to each other. When he looks up, Jack can see his reflection in the opposite window. God, he looks like a ghost. Pale skin and dark circles under his eyes, his face full of fear. He hardly recognizes himself. There's a little girl sitting in the seat on the other side of him, and as their eyes meet in the reflection, the intensity in her stare catches Jack off guard. But then the train is off, and the policeman says, "Almost there now, sir. Don't worry. Only two stops." Jack nods and lifts his eyes to see the little girl's reflection in the window again. She's still staring at him, the bright pink of her dress popping like a neon sign in the grey scale background of the tunnels. Jack gives her a little reassuring smile. She doesn't smile back, but suddenly lifts the sketch pad that's been propped on her lap and turns the page to face the window so Jack can see the inscription in the glass. In the reflection, he can make out the bulky black letters in a child's handwriting. "Run, Jack, run." He stares. His body turns icy cold. He yanks his head to the side to look at the girl, but the seat next to him is empty. He gasps and turns his face back to the window. There she still is, in the reflection, sitting next to him and holding up the sketchbook. "What the..." he mutters, but the words are swallowed by the loud screeching of the train on the tracks as it draws into the next station. The girl opens her mouth and her lips form the words, "Run, Jack, now." Something inside him jolts awake, and the previous trickle of uneasiness explodes into a crashing wave of panic. The carriage around him starts spinning. The policeman says something to him, but Jack isn't listening. He needs to get out of here. The train stops. "Mind the gap. Mind the gap," says the electronic voice, and the doors slide open. Without thinking, like a jack in a box, Jack is out of his seat. Within seconds, he has pushed past the commuters and is out on the platform. The policeman calls after him, but Jack isn't listening. He runs. When he turns the corner and looks back, he sees that the policeman has also gotten off the train and is now chasing after him. "Run, Jack, run." With his heart thumping in his ears and his legs feeling like jelly, Jack stumbles onto the escalators. Two steps at a time, he presses past the other commuters. Only when he reaches the top, does he dare glance back down. The policeman is only halfway up still, trying to squeeze past the people and talking to someone on his walkie-talkie. Jack heads for the ticket gates. The one on the left stands open. He doesn't bother tapping out, and as soon as he's through, he runs. Someone shouts behind him, but there's no time to look back. He dashes through the tunnel to the stairs, and when he turns the corner, he is suddenly in a crowd of tourists dragging their large suitcases. "Excuse me," Jack says, trying to get past. "Make way, please." But the next moment, someone grabs him by the arm and yanks him to the side. "Hey!" Jack cries out, but he's roughly pulled into a narrow emergency exit. He gasps when he recognizes his assailant. "You?" "Shh," Charlotte says, and leans over to peer back into the main tunnel. There's a policeman following me," Jack stammers. I needed to get away. Something's happened." Charlotte clamps her hand over his mouth. Her face is close to his. There's a wild, scared look in her eyes. "Shut up, okay?" she whispers. Jack hesitates. They nod. The group of tourists drifts past them with their luggage in tow. One or two gives them a curious glance, and Charlotte removes a hand from Jack's mouth. When the people have gone past, she peers around the corner again. Then she curses. "What is..." Jack begins, but then Charlotte grabs him by the jacket, and before Jack can figure out what is going on, she kisses him. Taken aback, Jack's mind goes completely blank. Gone is the danger, and the policeman, and the girl in the window, and every other ridiculous thought for that matter, for Charlotte is all over him. Her body is pressed up against his, her hands in his hair, her warm breath and her scent all over his face. When her tongue enters his mouth, fireworks go off in Jack's head. Time stops. Glass shatters. The earth tips. Jack can feel himself falling down, down, down. And all he is aware of is the kiss. How it feels, how it tastes, how it smells, and how his body has jumped to life as if it has been plugged into an electric socket. And then, suddenly, Charlotte lets go of him and pulls away. Gasping, Jack stares at her through a cloud of dark spots. "You," he stammers, "why did you do that?" "Yeah, sorry," she says. "That guy was right on top of us." Then, as if nothing at all has transpired, she peeks out of their hiding place again. "I think we've lost him." She turns to Jack and grabs him by the hand. "Come on, let's get out of here." On jelly legs, Jack follows her as she pulls him back in the direction from which he had just come. They head for the exit at the opposite end of the station, and as they ascend the stairs into the street, Jack finally has most of his senses back. "Where are we?" he stammers. "Kilburn Station," she says. Out of breath, they emerge in the dark street and stop on the street corner. The sudden busyness of traffic and noisy crowds feel unreal. "The policeman," Jack utters. "Where did he..." "Oh, that wasn't a real policeman, Jack." "Not?" he asks, his mouth dry. "How do you..." "He's wearing a costume." "A what?" "A costume. A fake copper uniform. You can get them on Amazon for parties. It doesn't have..." Charlotte indicates something on her shoulder, but then shakes her head. "Never mind that. We have to get out of here." With a fresh air now in his face, the memory of what has transpired earlier floods back. "Susanna's been taken," Jack says. "What?" "They took her. She's been kidnapped." "Oh, jeez." A fresh wave of panic pushes past the fog in his head. When he looks up, Charlotte is staring at him with wide eyes. Shock seems to have momentarily robbed her of a response. "We have to go to the police," Jack says, adamantly. "The real police this time. Where's the nearest station?" He sees the change come over Charlotte's face. "Okay," she says. "Come on, this way." Less than an hour later, Jack and Charlotte are sitting next to each other in the overlit inquiry room at the police station. Jack has given his statement of what happened earlier, as well as a description of the policeman impersonator who had picked him up. The inspector who interviewed them asked for a recent photograph of Susanna, but after searching through the photos on his phone, Jack discovered that he didn't have a single clear picture of her. In all the photos, her face is partly obscured or blurred. "Don't worry," the inspector says. "I'll just ask them to pull something off the internet. Where did you say she worked?" "Oh, BME," Jack said, That stands for Bushkin Missions Enterprises. Her father is Grant Bushkin, the businessman. Maybe you've heard of him? Don't think so, the inspector says, standing up. But we'll check it out. Wait here, Mr. Forrester, Miss Harding. They watch as the inspector leaves. You okay? Charlotte asks, when the door is closed and they're alone. No, Jack says. Yeah, I suppose not, she says. They sit in silence for a moment. How did you know where to find me? Jack then asks, frowning. I told you, But Jack interrupts. I know what you told the inspector, he says, but I don't buy it. Sorry, you didn't just run into me by accident. Just like it wasn't an accident, you showing up at the leisure center yesterday. You were following me again, weren't you? What? No. Come on, Charlotte, drop the act, please. My girlfriend's been kidnapped. I'm really not in the mood for... Okay, fine. It was Mr. Beducci, okay? Jack frowns. Mr. Beducci? Your neighbor? What is he? I ran into him and Melanie at the hospital, and he told me that he had this dream about his wife, and in the dream she told him to tell me that you needed my help and that you would be at Kilburn Station. Jack stares at her, shocked. I know it sounds crazy, she says. He shakes his head. If you told me this yesterday, I would say so, yes, but not after everything that's happened. What the heck is going on here, Charlotte? What have you dragged me into? Me? She asks, offended. You are the one seeing dead people in windows and pools. They're not dead, he protests. But then he frowns. At least, I don't think so. It's all very weird, Charlotte says. But, Jack, there's something else I have to tell you. Oh, great, he sighs. Now what? It's about Blake. Jack looks at her, alert. Your paparazzi boyfriend. Ex-boyfriend, she corrects him. Dear God, Jack says, he's not dead, is he? What? No, he's fine. It was him I went to see at the hospital when I ran into Mr. Beducci. Only I never got to speak to Blake, not really. I just went to his room, and then I overheard him talk to someone. She hesitates. Then she tells Jack what she had heard in Blake's room, and how there was no one in the bathroom when he exited. He said he was on the phone, she says, but his phone was still on the bedside table, and I definitely heard another voice in there. And he said he was going to kill me? Jack asks, his voice thin. Why would anyone want to kill me? Why is any of this happening? Charlotte sighs. Jack rubs his face with his hands. Jeez, he says. Do you think we should tell the police? Charlotte asks. Jack frowns. There's probably a limit of what we can tell them before they'll think we're hallucinating. Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well, Charlotte says. But before Charlotte can finish her sentence, the door opens and the inspector steps back into the inquiry room. You said your girlfriend's name is Susanna Bushkin, Miss Forrester? He asks, looking down at the notebook in his hand. Yes. And she works for Bushkin Missions Enterprises, Jack says. The inspector looks up. Yeah, see, the problem with that, Mr. Forrester, is that we could find no trace of a Susanna Bushkin fitting your description anywhere online, and there's no company called Bushkin Missions Enterprises. What? Jack stares at him. But that's not possible. We ran multiple searches, the inspector says. No businessman by the name of Grant Bushkin either. But are you sure? Jack feels as if the floor under his chair is sinking, as if the room is turning sideways. No one's heard of him, Mr. Forrester. And the address you've given me, where you say you live with this Susanna, is owned by what looks like a shell company in Dubai. We're trying to get hold of someone over there now who can give us more details, but it's not looking good. Jack stares at the inspector. What are you saying? What's not looking good? The policeman closes his notebook and looks at Jack with narrow eyes. I don't think your girlfriend was who she pretended to be, Mr. Forrester. I think she was lying to you about everything. That then concludes chapter 8 of my story, Don't Know Jack. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're still listening, and I hope you're looking forward to the next chapters. Please remember to follow, subscribe, and rate this podcast so we can push the numbers up. Also, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to know what you think about the story. Pop me an email at spoonpress_uk@gmail.com. Thanks again for all the support. Thanks for listening. We'll chat soon. Bye.
Welcome, all story lovers. Dive into the enchanting world of Spoon Press Audio, your go-to podcast for a daily dose of fiction. Whether you fancy brainy masterminds, gutsy heroes, or cheeky lovers, we've got stories to captivate you and sweep you away from the ordinary humdrum of your day. Created by the award-winning author and entrepreneur, Anna M., Spoon Press Audio is a perfect blend of laughter, intrigue, and suspense. But also, these stories are specially designed to boost your brain power and mental well-being. So be sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. Join us on an epic adventure only at Spoon Press Audio.